the committee would come to order. This is the Conference Committee on Senate Bill 36. The bill has been held since the session concluded last year. Right towards the very end, I just determined that there was so much going on that to get a meeting together to take care of the action that needs to take place in conference, that it would make more sense just to hold it for this year. We are, I believe, at a point where actually to make the change to the bill that is necessary, we have to get to free powers for the Conference Committee. That is not a level of powers that this group can actually undertake, because it would entail a consideration of language that is not currently in the bill. Last year, I think we did circulate the letter around that, and we got all the House signatures to actually submit back to the presiding officers to let them know that we needed to go to free powers. But rather than just get the Senate signatures again, because of the amount of time that has elapsed, I felt that we probably should just have a quick meeting to touch base so that everybody's is on board, understands what we will be asking the new committee with free powers to be considering. So with that, Annette, why don't you come up and let us know on behalf of the Division of Elections what issues you have.
People in my office, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Annette Kreitzer, Chief of Staff to Lieutenant Governor Lehman, and several issues with the version that passed the House. Since that happened, House Bill 94 also passed, and one of the things that we brought to the sponsor's attention was to delete all of the language out of Senate Bill 36, which is now current law. And so in any conference committee substitute that might be adopted, we thought that would make looking at Senate Bill 36 easier to follow, just to take everything out that's now current law. The second issue came up, again, because it was the end of session, and this is something we should have caught but didn't catch. I'm not sure what versions you have in the packet, so I'm mostly looking at this version that passed the House, which is the House CS for Senate Bill 36 Judiciary Amended House. I don't know if you have that. Do you have that version?
I do. Is that the members? It says Amended House. Amended date 5505.
Do you have that version?
We have that.
Okay. So I'll refer then to sections.
Yeah, this was a proposed conference committee CS. Okay.
So in sections 5 and 6 of that amended House version, if you'll note at the bottom of page 3 on line 31, this, I'll start actually on line 20, a person commits the crime of unlawful.
Wait a minute. Page 3 you're on.
Yes, page 3.
Line 31.
Actually, I'll start at line 20. A person commits the crime of unlawful interference with voting in the first degree if the person, and then if you go to line 31, encourages or assists in a violation of AS 1520-081. And I'll stop there. And then on section 6, you'll see on line 18 that very same language, encourages or assists in a violation of 1520-081 for interference with voting in the second degree. This had nagged at the back of my mind for a long time that I thought there was something problematic with this language, and I asked Department of Law to take another look at this since it was in conference committee and to see if, in fact, it is problematic. And the Department of Law came back with a memo, which I believe is in your packet as well.
We only have the February 8. It references a January 26 memo. And I'm wondering if Dave or somebody, if you could pass that out. I don't see that.
You may not have a January 26th. Which memo do you have?
This is the one from Catherine Kurtz. It's not Department of Law.
No, this is a separate issue.
But I'm taking the opportunity to ask for the other one anyway.
On this issue on 081, I believe you have an email in your packet from Sarah Felix to me saying that, yes, the opinion of the Department of Law is that these two sections, Section 5 and 6, with regard to violations of 1520-081, should actually be more specific and spell out exactly what it is you're violating. And so that we came to the sponsor and asked if he would be amenable to taking that up in the conference committee.
Thank you.
And then I don't have any other changes in front of me. Senator Terrio, I'm not sure how what else you'd like me to address at this time.
Okay. And so the reason that we would need to go to the powers, free conference powers, actually, again, would need to be a new group of people, is that because we're considering adding language here that did not appear in either version of the bill, it's outside the powers that this group
can't has. We keep our same ourselves or can't we just request powers of free conference?
No. When you get to free powers, actually granting free powers, it has to be a new group of people.
It does. Can they reappoint us?
No, it has to be new people.
New people. Oh, okay.
And I believe the uniform rule specifically says that nobody who has served on the lower or earlier committee can serve.
Oh.
And it really is, because you generally don't get to free powers unless there has been sort of a deadlock.
Yeah, that's not the case.
And that's not the case here. However, the rules are written so that, you know, that you have new people, fresh look at the issue.
Well, that's okay. Mr. Chair, I've obviously haven't done my homework here and looked at these Catherine Kurtz memos mentioning the Wesley Education Foundation case. Is that something else we, or should we brief our successors on? We get a copy of the opinion?
That was a concern that Catherine came up in the second memo, though. I think you'll notice that she says that the last paragraph on the February 8th memo talks about she has had conversations with a gentleman in the Department of Law and indicates that, you know, she may have been a little bit alarmist in her earlier memo. And to tell you the truth, when I read the first memo and really gave it some thought, I disagreed with her. Mm. Subsequently, without my prompting, she came back and said, yeah, I probably jumped the gun. She didn't think that there would be an impact from the Wesley case that was decided in the summer.
Did you read the Wesley case?
I didn't read the...
Does anybody have a copy of that case? Okay, I could get it from Ledge Library. And it'll be a few days before the reconstituted committee meets. I'll probably get it and read it. And would people be interested if I got a copy, me circulating it to you?
Well, we do have somebody here from the Division of Elections. Is that right? Are you able to speak about that case? Or
we haven't internally reviewed the Wesley case. What we did was turn it over to Department of Law because we're not attorneys.
Yeah, I'll just and get it from Ledge Library.
Yeah. Okay. We did ask for our own internal review in case there were issues that needed to be dealt with.
I just, out of curiosity, if no other reason.
So, Annette, basically, just based around the email that we received from Sarah Felix, again, if you would just go over for the record, that the suggestion was that sections 5 and 6 needed of the House amended version
needs to be very particular about what is being criminalized, what behavior is being criminalized. And so that would be our suggestion for the amendment. We did have an amendment drafted up for you to look at and for Catherine Kurtz to look at to see if it would satisfy both the sponsor and Ledge Legal. And I believe you are holding that in a pending file.
Yeah. Well, we actually have had this draft CS written up. It's the /N is a Nancy version, dated 2806. And if you look then at pages 4.
So they've incorporated the proposed language.
Yes.
Right.
And actually, the sections now become sections 4 and 5. And they have incorporated the new language with very specific language on, as Annette indicated, what actions or activities are being criminalized.
Okay.
And let's see, we ought just to make sure that we cover all of the changes. Sections 5 and 6 now become section 4 and 5.
Right.
Because other language was dropped out.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman. Annette Kreitzer again. In the House version, there is a section 4. This is on page 3 of the amended House version, beginning at line 11.
There's language that, if I remember correctly, Representative Caldwell had placed in this bill and was also working in 94.
Right.
At the end of the process, he agreed that that language was inadvisable, and it was dropped out of 94.
Of 94, correct.
And we would just be dropping it out of this bill.
Of Senate Bill 36 as well. What Representative Coghill wasn't aware of, this was a floor amendment. Let me explain Section 4. The first sentence, where it starts, 1525-060C, that first sentence is in House Bill 94 and is now law.
Are you looking at the House passed version?
Yes, I am. I'm looking at page 3.
Amendment
H. Line 12?
Line 11.
Line 11.
Mm-hmm. Amended by adding a new subsection.
I see. Okay. Sorry.
That's all right. And so that first sentence that begins on line 12, if a voter is not voting in person as requested in absentee ballot, that is now law. That was included in House Bill 94. The second section of that was a floor amendment if the voter did not indicate affiliation with a political party or group. This was a floor amendment that was done, and I've had conversations with Representative Coghill. I think, Senator Terry, you've had conversations with Representative Coghill. He was not aware of the Division of Elections policies and procedures when a voter doesn't declare. And you have, I think, in your packet, the policy and procedure from the Division of Elections.
It's right here.
And Whitney Brewster, the director, is here and can speak to what happens in this instance where, I'm sorry, I lost my page, where a voter didn't indicate an affiliation with a political party or group when registering to vote. And I happily relinquish my position.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director for the Division of Elections. I just wanted to briefly touch on the current policy and procedures in place for dealing with absentee ballot applications where there is no ballot choice chosen. What the division typically does, or what it does do, is if that person is eligible for more than one ballot, that person is sent a letter indicating that they had not designated their choice of ballot. And then if they do not receive a response, that individual is not sent a ballot. I can tell you this year that the absentee ballot section for the Division of Elections has been ramped up with additional temporary employees to be able to respond to those folks who may have not responded by mail, or if there is not time, that if they've designated their phone number or email address or some other way to contact that individual, they will make phone calls, send emails in order to get that information, their ballot choice, from that individual.
But then it clears up the issue of whether you are in fact encouraging somebody to vote a way that they would not have.
That's correct.
To.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
You really want the instruction from the voter. And so Representative Coghill last year, with the passage of 94, agreed to modify that language.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. When we knew the bill was in conference committee, we began to talk to, we looked at it, reviewed it, and then went to Representative Coghill, the maker of this amendment, and asked him if he would be comfortable, after reviewing the policy procedure of the Division of Elections and seeing that the decision is solely the voter's decision, would he be comfortable dropping this language out, and he said he would.
Okay. And so then the modified language in that Section 4 passed into law on 94 last year.
Correct.
So that section falls out. The two sections bump up and give us the new sections 4 and 5 with the language suggested in the email.
So Section 4 is out of the conference committee. CS.
Of the House
the
passed
text. This Section 4 is gone.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So that just leaves us then with the language, again, that we don't have the access to the power to get to. And so I've got a letter here today that would go to the presiding officers basically saying that we took no action on the bill. We took no action on any bill sections and respectfully request that a free conference committee be appointed. We will then give them this suggested CS. It will be their decision then whether to adopt that.
So this would not have limited powers of free conference, but total free conference?
Yes.
Let me ask you, if it was only limited powers of free conference, would this committee remain constituted?
Yes. We could exercise limited free powers.
Well, let me ask you. My thought would be before we go the route of total free conference, I have to bring myself up to speed. Can we accomplish what we're going to do with limited powers? Oh, we can't.
We've asked Ledge Legal that, and they have told us that, no, you can't get there from here.
Oh, okay.
That's because of the new language.
Because of the new language, right.
Okay.
That's fine. Yeah. Usually you have, your first level of powers is you've got a section, I've got different language, we pick and choose between those two.
Mm-hmm.
Then limited free powers is, well, we can pick yours, but then we can modify the language.
Yeah.
But if we're talking about language that appears in neither one of them, then it's not.
People.
And that's because of this?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's sign that and be done.
So with that, then, if I can just have a motion, then, to report back that we've taken no action.
So moved.
And is there any objection? Okay, let's. Thank you very much. That concludes the hearing today.
Chairman, could I just say thank you very much to the members for your indulgence and for, even though it's a very technical amendment, we do appreciate you not passing into law what might have been bad.
Yeah, sure. And, we appreciate the attention to detail.
Yeah. Okay, and with that, we are adjourned.